take your hands off that mute button, because the Lotus Effect is coming up right fucking now!
This is a new live son of a bitch!
Bull frickin' horse shit!
I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert!
Attention!
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast, my only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
Well, you know who else doesn't give a shit?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Ah, not them again!
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right.
That's right. You know we're talking about episode 220 of The Lotus Effect, provisionally titled Penis Parasite. And if you were listening to Two and a Half Bens last night, I think it's pretty clear why we decided to give that title to this show. But welcome nonetheless. And if you did miss Two and a Half Bens last night, well, you can catch it on recording when it hits the website of your nearest podcatcher. But until then, you all know that the show is made up, the content doesn't matter, and despite being called many things, including a cunt, yeah, well, I'm still Phoenix, and this is still true.
Let me start this off by clearly stating that I'm better than everyone.
You are the motherfucking Antichrist!
And I'm Phone Boy.
And I am
okay,
the mother...
James Bond, let's go mess this shit up.
Boom, boom.
Yeah, sorry.
And I am the motherfucking Antichrist. Yes, I am.
Well, anyway, sorry about that. I didn't...
I forgot we had said we were going to do the do.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It's cool. That's the way we
that's
do
all
things.
Right. You do that to me all the time, so I figured it's only fair.
Yeah, that's right.
I accidentally did.
It's like you're learning your mute button habits from me, and you shouldn't do that. We know that. Those aren't good mute button habits to learn.
No, but some good habits I have learned from you is things like welcoming our Apple Podcasts and Spotify listeners, because you got us set up on all of that.
Yeah, that's in the script, too. So
there is that, but I'm saying you got us set up on Spotify and things a good piece of time ago, so we hope that people are, despite the AI code changes happening, because Spotify, like the rest of big tech anymore and whatnot, are fucking lazy. Well, welcome if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcast from. We love the fact, and don't freak out, because it's gonna get even weirder.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I'm gonna be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell aglowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes, the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing.
I just had an orgasm.
The guy is jizzing all over himself.
I'm freaking out, man.
You are freaking out, man.
Yeah, don't freak out. We know the Lotus affects everyone differently, and that's okay. Because however or wherever the Lotus is affecting you today, we definitely want to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
I got you $1.
No, we put a lot of time and effort into getting this show off the ground. We operate on the 3 T's value for value model, time, talent, and treasure. And if you do have some treasure that you'd like to send to us, you can go to lotuseffect.show, click the green We Like Money button, send us some of your PayPal or let me try that again. Send us some of your fiat fun coupons via PayPal, or you can use Cash App if that works better for you.
Can send us your credentials for your PayPal account if you
want. Yeah, oh yeah, no problem. We'll take care of that for you. Absolutely. Like I was saying, though, if you want to use Cash App, if it's easier, you can go to $TheLotusEffect33. That is our cash tag. You can also go to our merch shop, lotuseffect.shop, or you can go to Lotus Boutique on Etsy and show some love for Lotus there. Now, if you're not into having brand feces smeared all over, the Etsy shop is not branded, but it is still affiliated with us here at the show. Meanwhile, we do want to recognize a couple of special pedal heads who made their financial contribution. First one being Mama T with $5, which came in last week.
Yeah, it came in during the show, and I missed it, and I kept trying to write it into the show script to mention it during the show last week. I missed it, so sorry, but we appreciate it nonetheless. And
oh, you the executive producer.
I was going to say, he got stoned and he missed it.
Yeah, but...
But we'd also like to recognize Cotton Gin with his $5 a month donation. So we'd like to thank both of those pedal heads. Now, we completely understand if you don't have the scratch to send us your cash. We know times are hard and they're not getting any easier, especially if you've seen the gas prices. And if you've left your house at any point in time, I'm sure you have. War is great just for whose economy. Now, one thing you can do, one of the many things you can do, if it does not include finance, like we said, we know cash is tight right now. We love to know that you're out there, that you're listening. It only takes a moment or two, and there's a few ways that you can do that. First, you can subscribe to our podcast in your favorite podcast app. Find, follow, rate, and review. You know how it goes. And we mentioned we're on Apple and Spotify, and wherever you can add an RSS feed, you can get a hold of us. Now, if you want to communicate with us, the social media we prefer to use is
Mastodon. Mastodon.
That's right.
Yeah, you can find us on Mastodon. You can find me at phoneboy@lotuseffect.social. You can find her at phoneix@lotuseffect.social.
You can also send us feedback through email at feedback@lotuseffect.show. You can send us something by a snail mail. We'll keep the government employees employed as long as we can. Your uniformed member of the government that brings you your bills and your bullshit. Well, you can hit us up in the back channel if you'd like the address to send us something that way. Now, the main way you can join us and show us that you're out there sending the act back, come to the chat sometime. We do Rideshare Radio or 2.5 Bends Fridays at 9 Eastern, 8 Central, or we do this shit show somewhere between 8 and 8:30 and whenever the hell we get started on Saturdays, followed directly by Studio 33. And that all gets kicked off also at 9 Eastern, 8 Central. Details on how you can join us for all of those fun things are located at lotuseffect.live. Now, there's another way you can interact with us, which is to call or text 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
I'm sorry, sir, but that line is boozy.
Yeah, that line is always boozy because it's Google Voice answering and they're going to mangle your transcript and make you into a show title. Now, other than feedback, one of the main reasons why you would want to call 253-237-3321 is to weigh in on our weekly topic, which happens to be this week, knowing what your first red pill moment was. We would love to hear what broke you out of the matrix, what made you realize that it's all fake and bullshit, and to strap in, because it's going to get worse. Call 253-237-3321 and tell us about it. And now, let's take it from Dr. Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
But we're not taking this.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
That's right. Be respectful when you give feedback, criticism. Don't be like certain people who can't be professional and have to talk shit about other shows when they get donations, which they don't deserve because they're butt hurt because their partner wanted to be on top. But anyways, there's some advice we have from Leslie Nielsen we need to take.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
To do what? I don't know, but...
Oh, to definitely make sure that our first half of this show is never ever...
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Oh boy, speaking of drama... Why that drama queen in your life could make you age faster.
Ditch the drama llama.
Yeah, given what you just said beforehand, I think that first story just kind of fell into place.
Flowed like wine.
It did, yes. Spending time with someone who consistently creates problems or makes life more difficult can accelerate biological aging, and that can affect your overall health.
Now, wait a minute. This sounds like a very water is wet statement. Obviously, if you're spending time with someone who's always raising your stress level, which obviously if they're creating problems or making life difficult, of course it's going to accelerate the aging and affect your health. Stress is one of the worst things on your biological aging and your health that can affect it.
But well, honey, then that, yeah, this is a waters is wet article, I guess, but
clearly,
but science, let them science this out, because
science,
yes, science this out. Okay. So a recent study found that spending more time with people the researchers call hasslers and having more of them in your life can negatively affect various aspects of your life and health. Well, no shit. The researchers found that these relationships are not rare and that people with social or health vulnerabilities may be more likely to have hasslers in their lives. The studies were published in the Proceedings of National Academy of Sciences. Well, people that are on social media have hasslers. It's all the fucking hecklers. When you post your shit online, yeah, maybe stop posting everything online and just...
I mean, let's be honest, it's almost kind of an expected result. If you're on social media, you're going to have people who are going to make nasty, crappy comments. That's the human condition. Is it right? No, but it's what happens. It's another reason why we at the Lotus Effect encourage you to just say no to social media. Get off of FaceBag. Say no to Twitter or X or whatever the hell they're calling it today. Yeah, or just
blue,
say no.
Or Blue Sky or whatever fake gay social media is out there anyway. The researchers also noted that social relationships are fundamental to human health. Well, that's also true too. I mean, past research has mostly focused on the supportive nature of these relationships, and this recent study focused on the hasslers and the close social networks of individuals and the role these stressful people play. Now, those around us can either increase or decrease our stress levels because we are wired for social connection. And our social relationships can significantly influence and shape our mood, perspectives, motivation, and energy all on a daily basis and for future goals and visions, says an expert who wasn't involved with the study. It's kind of like Sir not appearing in this film. This study, which analyzed data from 2,345 participants, I kind of like that.
Okay, I was going to say, I think the sequential there is convenient.
Yes, it is. And speaking of which, this must be a convenient sample because they all came from people in Indiana.
That's the entire population of Indiana, 2,345.
Not quite.
Have you ever been to Indiana?
No, actually, maybe I passed through it once, but I don't think I've actually...
Yeah, Indiana's like a flyover state, kind of like Kansas. There's not much going on
there.
Yeah,
but I think there's more than that many people anyway, but...
There obviously is. Yeah. I was just being a wise ass.
Yes. Now, the participants ranged in age from 18 to 103, so they got a wide range of people.
Wow, there. 103. That's impressive.
Yeah, with an average age of about 46. Now, the individuals answered questions about their relationships, focusing on the previous 6 months.
Okay, stop. 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 Never mind. My brain, when you said relationships, went to like relationships like with your partner. And I'm going, who's still married to their partner at 103 or dating? Like, good on you if you are.
Yeah, exactly. The researchers defined hasslers as people whom the participants reported as often hassling them, causing them problems, or making life difficult.
Like I said, spouse.
Yeah. The average network size among participants was just over 5, with a maximum size of 25. On average, the individual reported around 8.1% of the network members as hasslers.
Wow.
Yes. The participants, 28.8%, reported having at least one hassler in their social network, and 10% reported having two or more. This suggests that persistently negative ties are not rare among personal relationships.
Okay, can we just double-click on that particular statement for just a moment? I have a question, which is, why? If you have someone in your life who consistently causes you stress and is not someone who you want to spend your time with, or, you know, you don't want this person sucking all of your energy, because people like that are definitely energy vampires, why do you still have these people in your life? I'm perplexed. As someone who spent more than enough years in my life with people who fit into that particular category, it just kind of makes me wonder, after realizing, like, You don't have to have those people. And it doesn't matter if they're related to you by blood or if it's a choice relationship. You deserve to be treated better and not have someone who's causing you lots of angst and or being a, quote, hassler.
Well, I would even take it a step further, though, because I've naturally drifted away from a lot of people in my life over the years. And a lot of times it just comes down to the fact that we're going different directions, and being around somebody that's going a different direction, it just doesn't feel right. You don't want to be around that person. And it's nothing against the person, right? They're just doing something different than you want to do. And that's fine. I mean, I had a friend that, he was always just a Debbie Downer, right? And at just some point, I just got tired. I just like, look, dude, I can't do this, you know. I don't want to. It's like, don't bring me down, Bruce. You know, I mean, come on.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, all right. Let's continue here. The researchers then examined the association between having hasslers in your life and biological aging. Now they compared biological aging using saliva samples from participants, enabling the researchers to measure specific epigenetic markers. I'm curious what they measured though. But anyway, they didn't say in the article, of course. But the analysis showed a clear pattern. For each hassler a person interacted with, their biological aging pace increased by about 1.5%. That means that someone with an extra difficult person in their life may age about 1.015 biological years for each chronological year, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but if you've got a lot of people...
When you start adding that up, yeah, and you've got multiple people for each person, it's 1.5?
It starts
racking up quick.
Yeah, exactly. So... Now, it's important to note that this study does not definitively show that having difficult people in your life directly causes aging, but it sure feels like it. The researchers also examined whether the association with hasslers was specific to biological aging or extended across health outcomes, and they found that the number of hasslers in a person's social group was consistently associated with worse mental health, for sure. Worse health across multiple domains, including your mental health. The strongest associations were among mental health outcomes. There you go. See, I've got it. You think I'd read the article first. I didn't know. Anyway, each additional hassler was associated with an increase in the severity of both depression and anxiety. This was followed closely by less favorable self-rated mental health outcomes. Now, whether they shorten your life or not, your best bet is to set clear value-based boundaries with these people.
Yeah, it's one of those things, best not to engage. If someone cannot respect your boundaries and you as a person, might want to reconsider that relationship.
Exactly. So... All right, I guess I think we've gotten through the first story. It's time maybe we can get back to I don't know, diet or something.
Ooh, we're really rolling now. So we have a question to pose to you, Petalheads. Can spending time in nature improve your diet?
I like fresh air, motherfucker. Eat it, just
eat it. Contributing to the growing number of studies that shows the mental and physical benefits of being in nature, a new study from Drexel University College of Nursing and Health Professions has found that individuals who spent more time in nature also reported better dietary behaviors, such as eating more fruits and vegetables. As compared to what?
I don't know.
Not really seeing how eating more fruits and vegetables is better dietary behavior, depending on if you were eating more fruits and vegetables versus, I don't know, little diabetes and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, remember that, you know, fruit is nature's candy. So the study, published in Social Science and Medicine, evaluated individuals' time in nature and their dietary behaviors. Our findings are some of the first to show that spending time in nature may promote healthier dietary behaviors, said a doctor who led the study as a student in the Department of Health Sciences in the College of Nursing and Health Professions. This woman and her co-authors are aiming to understand how everyday interactions with nature shape things like diet, movement, and well-being. Now I'm going to pause here and interject. When we are eating right, like we're supposed to, and we go out in nature, it does, I feel, promote wanting to eat better, because when you're out in nature, you're obviously exercising, unless you're just lounging around in the yard, but I digress. Most people, if they're out in nature, they're taking a walk, they're taking a hike, a bike, something like that. So it kind of seems hand in hand that spending time outdoors makes you want to eat better, which then makes being outdoors more beneficial for the exercise, and it's very circular. Cyclic, whatever you want to call it. It makes a circle. So our findings are, I already read that. This line of research is helpful, This line of research is helping us to understand that nature isn't just a backdrop for healthy behaviors. It's an active ingredient in health, according to the co-author of the study, who is an associate professor at said College of Nursing and Health Professions. We think this can help us design interventions that intentionally harness those connections. The researchers surveyed 300 adults across the U.S. who self-reported their time in nature and dietary habits from the previous week. We know how reliable that is. Sorry, just saying. So researchers looked at three different types of interactions with nature. Indirect, viewing nature but not being in it. Incidental, having it around you, such as having a houseplant. Or intentional, going into nature, such as going to a park.
Now, my question is, where would sitting out on our balcony fall in this category? And asking for a friend? Yeah, I don't know.
You know, wow, that's a great question, because we're kind of out there because we're outside.
Well, here's the way I look at it, because the way I look at it is, I see nature when I go outside. I see nature literally, like, the trees are right there. We got all these great birds that come right here. We actually found the other day I was outside. It looked like a red cardinal, and then some sort of blue, which I've seen, and then of course I always see our woodpecker out there, and a few other birds. It's actually, yeah. And if you're sitting down on the ground, sometimes you interact with the squirrels or whatever. Sometimes you throw things, but you just being outside.
I love the fact we have squirrels and chipmunks that we can throw peanuts to, and they like gathering them up. They won't do it while you're watching. They'll wait until you've kind of gone inside or whatever, and then they're like to go get them. But they're really cute, and I don't dislike having them around. Although that bloody woodpecker.
Yeah.
Oh, this thing every morning. You've heard me talk about the fact we have a metal mailbox that's grown into a tree here. And there is a red-headed woodpecker that absopositively loves every morning rat-a-tat-tatting on that friggin' mailbox. It's almost like an alarm clock. Just, I can't smack the woodpecker. Besides which, I wouldn't harm animals. I like animals better than people. But that's not in a bestiality way. However, the results that these researchers found is that incidental and intentional interactions with nature showed a significant association with positive dietary behaviors. Additionally, 30 survey participants were interviewed virtually to get a deeper understanding of the relationship between nature and diet found in the survey. The 30 participants represented a range of demographics and also a range of high and low dietary scores. During the in-depth interviews, participants were asked to rate their preference for being in nature on a scale from enjoys nature to prefers staying indoors, as well as explain why they rated themselves that way to connect their relationship to nature with their dietary behaviors. The researcher, now a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Penn, UPenn, explained that participants who spent more incidental and intentional time in nature had better diet quality and had a more sustainable dietary pattern. In the interviews, the research team found that mental health and feeling connected to nature were important, and that participants stated they wanted to pursue physical health. That makes a lot of sense. The participants pursued that goal through spending time in nature and their subsequent dietary behaviors. This almost seems redundant, phone boy, I'm just saying. But participants reported being in nature lessened depression, anxiety, and stress. That really makes a lot of sense. Anytime, like, we go for a stroll out on one of the trails through the wood, the wooded areas and stuff, it's very, very peaceful. So, of course, it's going to reduce depression, anxiety, and stress.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, we talk about, what do we do sometimes when we're depressed or we're not feeling good? We eat, more than we should, right? So if we're not depressed and we're not also eating, so I could see how that actually works, right? Is that because you're in a better mood, you're not eating because you're trying to change your mood or whatever, you're bored, you're eating because you're hungry, which is a better time to eat, so.
Exactly. And only eating till satiated. We do not need to eat until we're full and regretting our life choices. Now, the expert who did this study explained that this moderated the relationship between being in nature and diet intake. So individuals who reported less depression, anxiety, and stress exhibited stronger relationships in interacting with nature and dietary behaviors. And in the interviews, participants talked about how feeling connected to nature promoted them to eat more fruits and vegetables. Yeah, I'm getting a real Adam and Eve vibe here, and I'm not knowing why. I don't think I've ever walked out in nature and been like, damn, I could really go for a rutabaga. Just saying.
Although we had rutabaga the other night.
Why do you think I said that as the vegetable I was referencing?
Fair enough.
Don't make me audibly roll my eyes.
they don't know that we had a rutabaga the other night.
No, but at some point we can leave some stuff to the imagination behind the mic.
Why would we do that?
Yeah, okay, good point. So this professional, this expert, confirmed these insights with the survey data and found that spending time in nature increased people's connection to nature. That kind of seems like a redundant statement. You know, the more time you spend, the more connected you become. QED. But that connection to nature promoted a better quality and more sustainable diet, which is basically what we've been continuously saying throughout this entire freaking article. There are some different mechanisms that are potentially at play here. But if people spent more time in nature, if we as humanity spent more time in nature, I think we'd be healthier overall, according to this expert. And I have to agree with
that. Yeah, exactly. I mean, today I was having an issue today and I needed to clear my energy. And yeah, I went outside. I mean, fortunately now it's warm enough that.
Yeah,
I
can, barely though.
Yeah, although today, yeah, barely. It was not, it was like, yeah, but still it, the sun was out and it was still okay to be outside. So yeah, sometimes it's just, even where we live and there's road noise in times, it does sometimes get really quiet here, and it is really nice to just kind of hear the, you know, everything being, you know, everything just being what it is, you know, what it's supposed to be. But
I'll just be glad when the weather is to the temperature consistently where we can frolic around without a sweatshirt or a jacket.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Well, okay, let's go to the next story. And what does the next story have to say? Well, no offense to protein, but fiber is the real super nutrient.
Haven't you heard? Fiber is really good for you.
That's science, bro, and I got feelings, and my feelings is that you're wrong, bro. Wrong.
Yeah, thank you, Vinny. This one's from Oprah, so you know the propaganda is strong in this one. Fiber is a type of carbohydrate your body cannot digest, said the female expert who describes fiber as the skeleton of plants, since it provides structure as much as bones do for our bodies. God. Aside from helping plants stand tall, fiber supports many critical aspects of human health. They claim that according to the latest dietary guidelines for Americans, more than 90% of women do not consume enough of it. Yet, they link to the 2020 to 2025 guidelines, which are not the latest.
Remember, it's from Oprah.
Yes, because the latest ones are 2026 to 2030, I believe. And yes, and yeah, well, of course, they came from MAGA, so we can't have that, right?
And that's exactly why. Isn't Oprah like a major, yeah, like, well, Orange Man bad?
Yeah, well, yeah, she's also apparently involved in some of the Epstein stuff, too. But you know.
Wait, let me find my shocked face. Oprah involved in, you know, sexual abuse and trafficking of young girls? Say it ain't so, Oprah.
Yeah, but most people won't click on the link, much less notice that it's not less the latest one. So they kind of did their work. But I mean, they didn't even do their work correctly in this article. Now, broadly speaking,
they probably let AI do it.
They might be. Now, broadly speaking, fiber helps your body process waste efficiently, protects your cardiovascular and immune system, supports healthy weight management, and staves off chronic diseases. Now, if I can only do our taxes, too.
Right.
Yeah. How does it do so much? Well, because there's actually two types of fiber found in plants, soluble and insoluble, and they work together like Batman and Robin in your body. Yeah. I get these stories sometimes just for the absolute bullshit that's in these stories. It's crazy.
No, 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 no. Fuck that. Sorry, I couldn't resist. What a pathetic fucking, oh, it's like Batman and Robin. Could you maybe come into, oh, I don't know, this century with your references?
Yes. Soluble fiber. Well, remember that this is probably a boomer that wrote this story if it's for Oprah. So let's okay, be honest fair. About that, right? So soluble fiber found in foods like oat bran, apples, berries, lentils, and barley dissolves in water to form a gel-like substance.
Also known as glucose.
Yes. Well, it forms glucose, too. Yeah, you stole my punchline, honey. This gel helps slow down digestion and aids in the absorption
Sorry.
Of nutrients. Which an expert says, right, and keeping things slow also stabilizes your energy after eating, no punch post-lunch sleepies, and helps you feel fuller after meals, handy if you're trying to lose weight. It's also good for managing diarrhea and other irritable bowel syndrome symptoms. It also keeps your blood sugar artificially high, but anyway, because...
Yeah, don't look over here, nothing to see.
Yeah, exactly. But that's not all. Oh my God, this is starting... I mean, who's this?
But wait, there's more.
Yeah, the gel created by the cellular fiber sucks up bad stuff from your body on its way out of your gut, too.
Oh, good. So it's kind of like a lint roller for your gut.
Yes. It binds to dietary cholesterol particles in the small intestine before they hit your bloodstream, lowering your cholesterol and reducing your risk of heart disease.
There it is. The big, giant lie in the sky.
Yes, exactly. Soluble fiber also binds to bile acids to help eliminate toxins from the body, says some expert. Soluble fiber even acts as a prebiotic or food for the healthy bacteria living in your gut microbiome. Now, well,
let me ask you a question, phone boy. Now, I'm going to be serious. I'm not slagging anybody or anything on this one. I'm being very serious. On the occasions, we'll say, when you consume something that would be considered fiber, okay, apples or maybe a grain occasionally, okay, what reaction does your gut have? I'm asking a serious in-depth investigative question.
Depends on what it is. I mean, sometimes it will definitely set off the gas meter, you know.
Ding, 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 ding. That's exactly what I was thinking. Is anytime I ever have eaten anything fibrous, the first thing I notice since cleaning up my diet is that I start getting the tummy bubblings. And you can't tell me that that's not completely created by the fiber itself and it's breaking down, that's literally creating this uncomfortable intestinal, you know, gas.
Yeah, no kidding. So, I mean, it's probably not, yeah, that's probably, yeah, who knows if it's that great. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. When I eat nothing but meat and I don't have any problems. But, hey, what can I say? I'm not to say that I don't believe in the microbiome or anything. Yeah. You know, your microbiome reacts to what you eat. Yeah. And guess what? Plant matter is not all good for you. Yeah. Here, arsenic. You know, you need enough almonds. Yeah. You're going to get arsenic, right?
Raw almonds. Yeah. They have to be raw.
Yeah. They have to be raw. Yeah. So, yeah, so well-fed gut critters help support your immunity and brain health and are linked to a reduced risk of chronic disease. Now, seriously, what's not to love here? Well, the arsenic poisoning from eating too many almonds. And yeah, trust me, you eat too many almonds. I know what that feels like. Oh, boy.
You get the Shiites.
Yes. So insoluble fiber found in foods like cauliflower, celery, skin on potatoes, and whole grains does not dissolve in water, hence the name. Instead, it passes through our digestive system mostly intact, acting like a broom, says the expert, which is why it works for wonders for constipation. Plus, soluble and insoluble fiber are associated with decreased colon cancer risk. Now, well, this article claims the dietary guidelines for Americans recommend eating 14 grams of fiber for every 1,000 calories. The current dietary guidelines doesn't make a specific fiber recommendation at all, focusing instead on real food. Now, an expert says that fiber can be extra helpful for menopause clients to help reduce digestive woes that are common at this time of life, like gas, bloating, constipation, indigestion, and diarrhea. Now, of course,
it's going to cause that stuff too, though.
Yes, exactly. Now, of course, if you're going to eat more fiber, stick to fruits and veggies and not those fiber-enhanced convenience packaged items they keep foisting on you, which, you know, the article was trying to say, well, yeah, maybe you can eat, you know, you shouldn't eat those, but yeah, it's a scam. It's all a fucking scam, right? Now,
it's clearly a scam. And the more they try to, like you said, they don't even have a recommendation for how much fiber to eat, even though they used the old guidelines, which I'm pretty sure had a grains
it did. So they, like I said, they didn't even bother to read the current, they referenced the current dietary guidelines, but didn't actually do the reference, which just tells you that this, the people that write these things aren't even fucking paying it. You know, they don't even doing, they're just, I don't know what they're doing. They linked to the lot. They linked to the dietary guidelines they wanted to link to, but they lied about the fact that it's the current ones. But hey, what do I know?
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, when you,
I don't know what I'm curious about though is, do we have a submission from the good Rev yet?
Well, the, okay, but I, okay. So that's actually something I need to deal with here. But no, the answer is I think I have my, what do you call it? I just need to get it into the clip folder here so I can play it. I do have something to play. I just don't have it in my clip folder yet.
You hadn't imported it.
I hadn't imported it yet. And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm waiting for it to import because this is one of those times where we had a little bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for here? Yeah, it's been a rough week, folks. So, all right. We do have a cavalcade of stupidity, and we're going to play it now.
Hi-de-ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. And since I'm MIA, here's Phone Boy to take over.
What? Yeah, I saw you with your Jeopardy music over there, but I was prepared. I was prepared. So I don't know who made this song. Honey, do you know who made this song?
No.
No, I don't. I can only count to four. Where did we find this song out?
I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about. I've never heard of what the fuck you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. This is all you, my man.
Okay.
You are not throwing me under the bus for this shit show. I got nothing on this one.
Okay, well, I know we heard it and said this has to be a cavalcade. When I play it, I think you'll...
Maybe if you play it, yeah. I'll recognize
it. Yeah, but it's a parody of Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. That's
once again, you must have a side, bitch, because I've got no clue what you're talking about.
Okay, well, let me play it and you'll see. Well, like I said, unfortunately, I didn't have any. Unfortunately, this week has been kind of crazy and we didn't get. I usually have something queued up. I have this in here. We're going to play it just to see what freaking happens here.
I can only count to four. I can only count to four. I can only count to four. I can only count to four.
Okay, I'm not going to play that whole thing. So, because, yeah, anyway.
No. No, that was completely a waste of everyone's time.
Okay.
Thank you for nothing.
Well, we don't have a cavalcade of stupidity this week, then. So, there we go.
Wow. Why would you not play the rest of it?
Okay, well, I can play it if you would like, but you kind of looked at me like I was freaking crazy.
Yes, I rolled my eyes at you. It's my God fucking given right as your co-host.
Okay.
Because I have no idea where that song came from. It's actually being claimed.
Yeah. It's being claimed
by Sir B.
Okay.
That he found it.
Yes.
And sent it to you, I guess.
Yes. I think he did. We played it. We actually did play it in an after show, and that's why I put it in the script, is I thought we both liked it, but okay.
That's why you usually check with your co-host. It's not, I don't care.
Okay, well, let's move on.
Yep, and I didn't work this week, so we're just going to toast and jam.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun, and I'm having fun, and I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans!
Well, yeah, I don't know, our plans this week kind of got messed up, but anyway, hopefully you plan to call into 253-237-3321, and and tell us what your first red pill moment was. I guess we didn't cook tonight, did we?
I'm making, like, actual food that's cooked.
We're going to Denny's?
I should have stayed off the mic. This has been a complete shit show. We're not even 40 minutes in, and this is already completely a waste of everybody's listening. No, we didn't cook. We literally were supposed to cook, or I was supposed to cook, and unfortunately got the surprise that I did not want, and woke up this morning and went, oh, I think I have an assignment due. And I looked, and sure as shit, I did. So it took me every fucking minute I had right up to getting showtime, which is why we started late, to be able to be ready to put this show on. So I didn't cook, and it's not...
It's like an orgy in my mouth, and everybody's coming.
Oh, it's an orgy. Got it.
All right. So, well, we had fun at Goodwill last weekend because you found some cool... We decided to go do that.
Yes. This and the next story kind of, in a way, relate to one another.
Well, they do, yeah. So we had went, you said, hey, let's, usually we're working on homework or something. We usually don't get out on the, too often. And you decided you wanted to go to Goodwill. And I said, okay, let's go do that. And so you actually found a bunch of things that you can put candles in. You also bought like a Dilbert mug or something like that. And then we also bought a bunch of movies. I turned you over to the movies, and we ended up acquiring a bunch of stuff that, we'd like to own physical copies of, in case the apocalypse comes or something, because you don't want to stream. And then actually we had this incident with candle wax.
I was melting a cube, got sidetracked. About the time I realized a smoke was pouring out of the tin, I grabbed the handle and it burst into flames, which then created a lot of smoke in the house, caused us to have to take the cat to the vet the next day because he was in an asthma attack. We still have to give him meds. Done.
My goodness. Well, yeah, that is exactly what happened here. And then, yeah, you also got, we did that. And then you also got you sniped when we were out at Romo's the other night, working on your,
working on my internship project,
on your internship project. And we all, but you had decided, but, you, I think based on last week's show, you were looking to get, a particular version of a Bon Jovi album that had,
yeah. Ned said there's this collector's thing of Slippery When Wet. So I found one that was on auction and, yeah, sniped it, got it for less than what somebody was selling it on. So I now have that coming.
Yes, you do. And that's that. And I don't know. Well, yeah, we also took we had to take Cashmere to the vet, too. That was because that caused some issues with breathing and stuff. Oh, that candle wax was, yeah, it caught flame and smoked the house out, and we had to air things out and stuff.
Yeah, now I'm not doing any of that, so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess it's time to do the tarot. Can you play the thing while I go figure out what tarot deck I'm going to use? All right, so I have for my tarot deck that I've got out, or for my tarot reading that I'm going to do tonight, which I will, I've actually got the pulp. It's based on Pulp Fiction, this particular, it's called the Pulp Tarot, and I don't know. Like I said, the energies feel a little weird right now, so we'll see what happens here with the cards when I get them out here. As usual with this stuff, take what resonates, leave what doesn't. this is just my reading of the energy right now, and the people that are listening right now and whoever else hears this later, it's, take what you wish, leave what does not. I'm going to draw a couple of cards here and we'll see what we get. Well, I have the four of cups came out, and this lady looks like she just, yeah, that doesn't look, I need to read this one out here just to make sure that I understand what this one's about here, because that doesn't, She's not looking like she's very happy. That's what I'm saying. Things seem like, yeah, she, the lady on this card and the kind of feeling I get with this card is like, yeah, feeling a little blue right at the moment. And it may just be because, you know, tired. Could also be that maybe she, there's a shadowy figure holding a chalice in the back of her, and maybe that maybe is something that's going on there. But I don't know what else to think about it. Let me draw another card here and see what comes up with it. So we've got the Two of Wands in reverse, and the Two of Wands in reverse is usually where I'm feeling like that this is that things just kind of feel stuck right now. Usually with Two of Wands, you're starting a new adventure, but if it's in the reverse, it sometimes means that, it feels like things have gone off the rails or something, which is probably what happened here. Let me draw one more card. I don't know what them, I don't know. Anyway, let's see what we got here. All right. And we got the High Priestess in reverse. Wow. The cards are, seems like, the High Priestess, which I'm going to read the thing on this real quick just because I'm the High Priestess is, the High Priestess is maybe that, maybe something's, I don't know. It seems like we got to get back to our things. Seems like we're out of sorts right now. This is the way I kind of read this deck, read this energy. It feels like it's all out of sorts right now. I'm honestly having a hard time with the cards, so maybe I shouldn't try to do this right now. But anyway, I think we'll move on. I think it's time to weigh in. Is it not?
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
253-237-3321. So the question we had this week was, what was your red pill moment? We have a few calls. We have a few texts here. Let's see what we got. So Mama says her red pill moment took place a long time ago and it still hurts thinking about it. There was a cop, was banging his sister-in-law's wife's sister. I was listening to the two of them over the scanner. And this was back in the 90s when that sort of thing was more possible than it is now. Yeah. Unfortunately you can see what, the police are just as real as the rest of us, I guess, right? And honestly, I think, I'd have a hard time trying to figure out what my red pill moment is here. All right, let me go play, let's play my first voicemail here, and we'll see what we got.
Wow. Took me a minute to think, but I think my red pill moment came when I was in probably my mid-20s, I guess I was. I was applying for food stamps, SNAP, whatever you want to call it. And this is when they were doing in-person interviews. So I'm sitting at this woman's desk, and she makes a determination and tells me, well, I'm sorry, you're over the income threshold. And I'm like, I make shit for pay. How far over am I? I was over by $8. And this woman goes on to tell me that if I were a single mother, I would be getting benefits out the ass. And I looked at this woman and I said, are you serious? Because I've been responsible, kept my legs closed, and not had a baby with somebody who's going to run off instead of sticking with us, I'm being penalized by $8. And she didn't know what to say. I was like, I know it's not you, but this is bullshit. And I walked out. And I was so angry, I was in tears. And I think that was when I was red pilled, I think. That was when I realized that the system is rigged for honest people, responsible people. Sometimes it's complete and utter horseshit, the way we get treated. I pay my taxes, I pay into the system, and because of less than $10, I could not get my money back when I needed it. Oh my God, I was so pissed. I can't math. Still thinking about it over 20 years later. But yeah, so I guess that's when I was red-pilled. Curious to hear what everybody else's answers are today. Talk to y'all later. Love you. Bye.
My thanks, Jen. I appreciate the call. I think part of it, you know, I think we all find our situations with this stuff where we are, where we actually just, we think the system's there for us. We think that the institutions that we rely on are there and looking out for our best interest, and we find out that they don't, right? And we start seeing this enough times, and yeah, it turns into a red pill. I mean, that's the way you look at that, I guess.
I don't know. I don't know what to think about that. I'd say
my red pill moment. I mean, I don't know. I'd have a hard time finding my red pill moment here, but for me, I think it ended up being, I think when I was recounting earlier, it's like, well, yeah, when I tried to vote for Ross Perot, yeah. And I realized that, you know, you sit there and listen to what he was saying. And it's like, yeah, how could people not do that? You know, how could people not vote for that? No, they didn't vote for that. They voted for whatever. And I just, that's kind of where I started becoming kind of very, I would say that's when I really started questioning, you know, what was going on. But, you know, of course I didn't know enough back then. So there we go. All right. Let's play the next call.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Today's question, the red pills. When was you red-pilled? For those who don't know, it's a Matrix reference, like as in when you woke up to there's something amiss in the world. people that knew about the Epstein files fucking 30 years ago. As I was growing up, my dad was big on the conspiracy things. He had like a binder where he kept a bunch of stuff that he thought was interesting. And so from about the age of old enough to comprehend, I've had the whole, you know, conspiratorial mind frame, present. But for me and for a lot of people, in my general age group, our big awakening was 9/11, when we were told that an airplane hit the Pentagon, but yet there's not a single picture or video of what looks like a plane hitting one of the most secure buildings in the world. And then they told us that jet fuel melted steel beams. And then they couldn't even find the black box to the alleged airplane, but somehow found passports. You know, there was a lot of inconsistencies with what physics and the real world present and what was stated in that official narrative of the events that took place. You know, there's just a lot that encircled that. So for me, and like I said, a lot of people my age, that was our big, you know, what the fuck moment. Like, what the fuck? How can they possibly get up there and insult our intelligence in such fashion and everybody just accept it? Like, that for me was like fucking wow. Yeah, that's my time. Bye.
And yeah, I would say that, I'm thinking back on 9/11. Yeah, that would be a thing for sure. There was a lot of stuff about that didn't add up. I'd even, you know, I mean, it's I'm trying to think if I, what I remember about like when I was in high school, they were fighting in Iraq or something like that. It was Operation Desert Shield or whatever. It seemed like every time we go to war about something, it seems like it's, we're going for the same wars in the same places for the same reasons. And yet we still can't figure our shit out. So, that's the way that goes. All right, we got one more voicemail. I'm curious what this person has to say about their red pill moment.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Phoenix on the phone, boy. Probably the first time. Maybe a jelly bean? Or those red hots, red tamales. There's also other, like, Easter candies that were red. Jelly bean? What were they? I guess not only a brand, but just those candies. But yeah. But as far as not actual, like, pill. Well, those are pills, so maybe, I don't know. Take Tylenol for headaches, Midol for cramps. I don't know what's red. No, first time chosenly-ish, if you, well, no, we'll put it that way. Let's think. We'll go with, like, oh, the movie Loose Change back in the day. I remember being, like, buying into every little aspect of it, and then, like, a lot, then just, like, realizing later, I'm like, okay, not all of it, but, like, chunks of it that just do not make sense. And then the general questioning of things. And then maybe even before that, like JFK or something like that. And then not even getting into all the other stuff that I either hear about or learned about via No Agenda and thereabouts and Project Paperclip or all those sorts of things and whatnot and way down the rabbit holes. But yeah, probably stuff like that. Like, I don't think it was ever that hard for me. I thought about it later, and just the fact of, like, I grew up with faith, with religion, whatever you want to say, and just kind of, like, I've questioned it before, but, like, just even not getting into the, like, any specific or anything, I guess, but, like, I can't look around and go, like, absolute stance for everything. You know, even people are like, oh, it's the universe, or, you know, the universe created a will. I'm like, yeah, but, dude, like, just how everything works and everything like that. Like, I see creation, and not just happenstance sort of thing. So I've realized, like, ah, it's kind of easy to just see things and go like, yeah, you know, what everybody else is talking about or saying it's mainstream, it's just kind of, we're all generally in the same circle as far as, like, even politics or, you know, the man behind the curtain sort of thing. So it's like, I realize, like, kind of all of it, you can go like, oh, everybody's believing this, but it's kind of easy to go like, yeah, there's other stuff. There's other stories kind of thing. And yeah, that's why I was going into that. So anyway, love you guys. Stay dangerous. Whether or not it's a river or it's a lake, give a hearty, hearty.
Kaka. Thank you, Sir Christopher Battles. I appreciate that. Honey, what was your red pill moment?
Birth.
Well, yeah, you were skeptical at birth. Is that what you're saying?
I've known the world was a shitty dumpster fire my entire fucking life, and everybody was lying. That wasn't anything that came as a surprise to me. I didn't need somebody to, you know, create some movie with, you know, fucking what's his nuts.
What, Keanu Reeves? Is it?
Yeah, I was trying to remember his name. Yeah, good guy, but. Anyway,
yeah. Well, I remember seeing that movie in a nearly empty theater in London in 2000 or something. So, you know, yeah, I know. Yeah, she's gonna.
No one told me there was gonna be boasting.
Yeah, you want to? Yeah. So yeah, I mean, like I said, I had to kind of go through them in my own life, and I had to kind of figure out what was my, you know, it's like, well, I pointed to something, but yeah, I think I've always come into the world knowing something was not, you know, and like I said, I got thrown to the wolves very early in my life. And so I figured out pretty quickly that a lot of things were fake and gay, and just realizing, you know, the older I get, the more in depth I realize that things are fake and gay. So I don't know. I think I said, I think I'm with you. Born red pilled is what we come down to, but yeah, it's a show title. Yeah, Born Red Pilled. Yeah, I think it is a show title. Well, it is time to go to the second half of the show, though. And it's
brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because they pay me every time I do. It's a really good way to make money.
Yeah, maybe your ex should fucking start doing that. Maybe then she'd have her own money. She'd get off your financial dick. Well, not that this comes as any surprise to anyone, but experts are warning that GLP-1s are leading to the resurgence of a 17th century disease.
You might die.
Dietitians are warning that GLP-1 use can lead to extreme malnutrition, manifesting in diseases like scurvy, amid findings that the vast majority of studies fail to consider patients' eating habits. Well, no shit. You think? Because these fucking people think that this is a miracle cure. Just pop it in and I can eat anything I want. Fucking idiots, you get what you deserve. While GLP-1s like Ozempic and Wegovy have surged in popularity in recent years and are now available through injections and in pill form, yay, more ways to kill you, leading dietitians in Australia have discovered that existing research hasn't considered what patients are eating and how much. You would think that after the whole stomach staple thing where people were getting gastric sleeves and gastric bypass, and then, gee, why am I still 500 fucking pounds? Well, let's take a look at your shopping list there, buddy. Twinkies, ho-hos, yeah. You wonder why you're still 500 pounds. They don't give you, when you have these surgeries or you go on these drugs, they are not educationally counseling you on how and what to eat. They're just kind of giving you carte blanche. And if you're doing the illegal ones where you're going to a compound pharmacy or you're relying on some, you know, unbranded voodoo meds, of course, there's not going to be any guidance. But while the drugs work by suppressing appetite, eating too little or making poor dietary choices can lead to further issues. Nah, couldn't have anything to do with the fact that the medication is made from Gila Monster Venom. Now look at that. A reduction in body weight doesn't automatically mean the person's well-nourished or healthy. Nutrition plays a critical role in health, and right now, it's largely missing from the evidence. Now this This expert added that only two trials have recorded or published what GLP-1 users were eating. The current data shows that many patients using weight loss meds are functionally malnutritioned, which can lead to severe vitamin deficiencies. A 2025 study of adults with type 2 diabetes found that more than 20% of participants had nutritional deficiencies after 12 months of use. And a study examining patients before joint surgery found that 38% of the users suffered malnutrition versus 8% not using the GLP-1s. You know, or GLP-1s, sorry. It's interesting to me. That really seems stupid. And I'm going to say it again so you all can see how stupid it sounds. 38% who are using it are suffering from malnutrition versus 8% who aren't. I'm going to let that sink in for a minute because that's one of the dumbest statements I think I've ever seen. So last year, British pop artist Robbie Williams told The Mirror he'd developed a 17th century pirate disease after taking something like Ozempic. He was referring to scurvy, of course, a rare but serious vitamin C deficiency that in the worst cases can lead to death. Here's the thing. First of all, dude, we don't fucking care. If you're dumb enough to be taking this Ozempic drug, you deserve your scurvy.
Yeah. Well, not only, well, yeah, and you need to still eat properly. That doesn't just, yeah, again, it's none of these drugs. And
that's what I'm saying is they're not giving any nutrition. Not that these fucking doctors, again, Dr. Drubinsky, how much, you know, dietary training are you given? Zero.
And what they're given is the standard, basically the standard dietary.
Yeah, the standard American diet, the SAD, yes. Most times. And then you wonder why you're not, you know, you may be losing weight, but yeah, you're also very malnutritioned. I think that's what's scrambling people's brains, is they don't understand that you can still be eating and get malnutrition. It's what you're eating. Not always how much, for sure, but definitely what you are eating. The how much comes in definitely with this drug because of the fact that, oh, it, you know, it curbs your appetite. Yeah. So does drinking coffee for me during the day. But that doesn't mean at some point when my body says, all right, we're just going to cause you to have a colon cleanse. You might want to put some actual physical food in me. That doesn't mean that you reach for the unhealthy crap, y'all. No. This I don't understand why this is so hard for people to understand. It's very simple. We have said it a million times. We will continue to say it. There is one very good way to be able to get all of the vitamins and nutrients that you need in your body without taking a GLP-1, and it'll help you lose weight. Eat steak, eat steak, eat
a big old steer. Well done, honey. You handled that. You have to understand. I watched her, like, she was vamping while she was trying to pull the clip up on her soundboard, and she timed it perfectly. Well done, honey. I must give you a
yeah. Despite my temper tantrums, I am somewhat a professional. Yes. Professional. What we don't know.
Yeah. So, well, I think we can both say we've been struggling with sleep lately. And for this next story, now is lighter, and this is actually something I think you know that has happened since we've gotten together. I started sleeping lighter. Of course, I've also gotten older too. So,
man, you could not tell that via the fact that if I even move a minuscule muscle the 4 years plus we've been together, you are awake. You are the most insomniac sleeper. I can literally hear you. And I move one muscle. I feel the hand reach over. I love you. This fucking guy doesn't sleep. He's a vampire. He just pretends to sleep. And as soon as I move, he's like, oh, she's awake. I'm going to talk. I'm going to touch her. I mean, I love it. I do. It just makes me laugh because I've never known anyone who literally could go from to being fully fucking, I love you, awake when I get up to go pee.
So anyway, is lighter sleep a part of normal? Are you ready for me to type the?
No, I'm too busy breaking your balls and mopping up the whiskey and water that spilled on the floor. Thanks to the fact that when I went to hit my mute button to respond to what you had said, my cup sloshed.
I see. Well, anyway, so maybe I'll vamp for a second here, but yeah, well, we do this, but okay. So is lighter sleep actually just a normal part of aging, or is it actually something more serious?
How do I get to sleep? Those bars on the window. One, two, three, sleep.
Yeah, I love that song. And as you get older, it's normal to notice changes in your sleep, although my sleep's been all over the map forever my entire life. So it can include fewer hours of shut-eye, waking up more during the night, and finding it harder to drop off. However, despite the general view that older people tend to need less sleep, scientific evidence suggests that this change isn't actually a question of needing less rest, but of a reduced ability to fall into a deep, continuous sleep. Now, older brains still need to rest, but they find it harder to do it more superficially. It's as if the off switch that keeps us asleep works less effectively as time goes on, or it's things like your bladder that wake you up every like hour and a half or something, which I had this morning.
That indicates you're old.
Yes, well... One of the main reasons we get worse sleep as we age is the loss of stability in the system that regulates sleep and wakefulness. I'm still waiting for my system to be stable. It's never been stable in any part of my life. It goes through periods of time where sometimes it's really good and sometimes it's not. So now the young brain, the system functions like a firm switch. It's either awake or asleep. Never did for me. But as we get older, some neurons that promote and maintain sleep are lost, while others that sustain wakefulness also get weaker. And as a result, the brain shifts states more easily, leading to lighter and more fragmented sleep. Now, our biological clocks also change with age. The group of neurons that coordinates the entire body's circadian rhythms, known as the suprachiasmatic nucleus, continues to function, but its day becomes shorter and starts earlier, and its signals become less intensive. This partially explains why older people tend to fall asleep and wake up earlier. It also explains why their nighttime sleep is more sensitive to external stimuli and why they can experience more drowsiness during the day. Put simply, the brain receives a less clear signal about when to sleep and when to stay awake. Yeah, also worry about things like, I mean, I'm glad I'm not doing this anymore. You know, all the time zone changing I did with all the traveling I used to do, which I, you know, now I just changed time zones. All we have to do is drive over the mountain and we change time zones because of where we live.
Let's
see. Another significant change is in our sleep pressure. And this urge builds up throughout the day and causes us to sleep at night. And it depends on a substance known as adenosine. As we age, the brain continues to accumulate fatigue, but responds less effectively to the signal.
It's pronounced adenosine.
Adenosine.
Okay,
adenosine. Okay, well, all right. Well, that's good to know. Although the need for sleep remains, it becomes more difficult to translate the signal into deep, uninterrupted sleep. Now, deep sleep is essential for brain recovery. It's also tissue directly affected by structural changes in the brain.
Dude, at this point, you got to slow down because your tongue's running 5 miles slower than your brain.
Something along those lines.
Your blaine.
My blaine, yeah. This phase of sleep occurs primarily in the frontal regions, which lose thickness and connections as we age. As a result, the slow brain waves that characterize deep sleep become weaker and less frequent, especially at the start of the night. Now, during sleep, the brain also sends out brief signals that help consolidate memories from the day. As we age, these signals diminish and become less synchronized with deep sleep. This contributes to a decline in learning and memory efficiency, even in healthy older people. Finally, aging affects the connections that enable different regions of the brain to work in sync during the night. And although the neurons that generate sleep are still present, their signals are transmitted less effectively. Now, the result is less deep, more fragmented, and less restorative sleep. It's important to note that lighter sleep is considered part of the brain's natural aging process in healthy older adults. So these changes do not necessarily lead to cognitive problems. Now, this article talks about lifestyle factors also being in play and mentions medicines. Now, while essential, says the article, of course, because everybody's got to be medicated for everything possible, right? Whether the disease is real or not, whether it's a real condition or not, right? Everybody's got to be medicated all the time. There we go.
Well, before you end your rant on that, I was actually having a conversation with one of our pedalheads about restless legs. And they said, it's not that I have restless leg syndrome, not going on a pill or anything for that. I was like, yeah, just when you get like overtired, your legs get a little restless. I totally get that. But if you went to the doctor and said, yeah, you know, I get overtired and, you know, my legs get a little twitchy. Oh, my God, you got restless leg syndrome. Here's a pill. I guarantee you that is exactly how that conversation goes.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, let me go back to this here. They say that lighter sleep is part of the brain's natural aging process, right? And it doesn't necessarily lead to cognitive problems. Now, the article does talk about lifestyle factors, right, which we said. They also said frequent use of medicines can disrupt sleep patterns. These things range from sleep aids like anoxylics that affect sleep, so the antidepressants, beta blockers, diuretics that interfere with the onset, stability, or continuity of sleep. Also, Benadryl, which sometimes you take for
That's
sleep.
Right.
It actually has the opposite effect. And by the way, there's nothing mentioned about the food you eat and the impact that might have, because that's one thing I can remember when I was doing this and being very strict, is that actually my sleep got a lot better. At least I was able, I was also running, you know, several miles a day too. So between those two things, I was able to actually get maybe not enough sleep sometimes, but I got enough of the right kind of sleep, I guess, that it worked. And I don't know. I mean, what might that have? You know, I mean, what effect might diet have? They don't even talk about it. It's much like the other story we talked about. They said, oh, we don't really know what diet might have to do with all of this. Yeah, it has nothing. Yes, you might be taking Gila monster venom, but you can be, you know, even in that story said you can be have malnutrition even if you eat and you don't take the Gila monster venom. So, you know, it depends on what you're eating or not eating. And how do they define malnutrition anyway? I don't know. I mean, that's a different.
It's, you know, it's a big scary term that basically amounts to a vitamin deficiency. And what they don't talk about how food might interrupt your sleep, this is kind of unconventional, but think about if you eat something right before you go to bed. And most people are not eating the way Foam Boy and I do, so you're probably eating seed oils or grains or something like that. You can have sleep interrupted by things like indigestion. I know I have occasionally been woke up, and this is not diet specific. It just happens. If you eat at a certain time before you go to bed, and let's say that you don't go right to sleep for some reason, usually within about 30 minutes to an hour after eating something, what usually happens, Foam Boy?
You get a crash.
You got to vie for cards, are my man.
Yes, that's well, that too, yes.
I know I'm not the only one in the middle of the night that's gotten woken up by my stomach being like, hey, psst. Hey, yeah. I know you were sleeping, but I gotta poop.
Yeah. Well, or it's me so, when I get up. It's like, yeah, like this morning, like the third time I had to get up to go, because we were up late last night. And so, yeah, by the third time I get up, I'm like, I go pee again. And I'm like, oh, crap. Here we go.
Literally, like the movement plus gravity, I truly believe, makes all of the peristalsis occur. And then your brain's like, oh, here we go.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. But what I do know is that this final story, yeah, we've been talking about guidelines and how fake and gay they all are. Well, You know, that'll...
Well, and we've also been talking a lot about ADHD lately, so that this just kind of goes along with that.
Yeah, exactly. So, I guess this is the final story, right? This is it.
Yeah, this is my story. So I'm going to get into it. So half of psychologists assessing for ADHD don't follow the diagnostic guidelines, according to a new study.
I clearly don't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a condition that develops during childhood and affects 6 to 10% of kids and 2 to 6% of adults. People with ADHD have either mainly inattentive symptoms, such as lacking concentration, mainly hyperactive and impulsive symptoms, such as speaking or acting without thinking, or a combination of the two. Two people with ADHD can have very different symptoms and experiences, so it's important for clinicians who diagnose the condition to have the right knowledge and expertise. New research found half of psychologists who assessed for ADHD didn't follow the diagnostic guidelines or criteria. This means less typical presentations of ADHD, such as in women and girls, quite inattentive adults, and high-achieving students, could be overlooked. ADHD is currently diagnosed by a psychologist, psychiatrist, or pediatrician. Now, hold on a second. I find it very interesting they went from psychologist, okay, trained in brain work, psychiatrist, also trained in brain work, to a pediatrician. A nose wiper. Just putting that out. It's amazing to me. So Queensland, Australia GPs can also diagnose ADHD. So that's cool. A GP in Australia can let you know that you're bouncing off the fucking walls. With more states and territories to follow. ADHD can't be diagnosed with a blood test or other simple measures. It requires the consideration of multi-factor and information sources, along with clinical judgment. Australia's evidence-based practice guideline for ADHD, released in 2022, provides a clear standard for assessment and treatment. It recommends ADHD assessments include a full developmental, mental health, and medical history. Medical assessments should be used to rule out other factors which could look like ADHD, such as sensory impairment, thyroid disease, anemia, or medication side effects. The clinician must also consider the social, psychological, and clinical context of a person's symptoms. This requires input from more than one setting and a person, such as a teacher or family member. The assessment shouldn't rely solely on questionnaires or looking at the person. Now, I have to agree completely with that. There's a lot of facets in diagnosing this. And the fact that it's been heavily overdiagnosed, especially here in the States, because big pharma, it's just easier. You know, any bit of squirming, twitching, or not sitting still like a little cookie cutter in your seat with your hands folded in your lap like a prim and proper little, you know, little gentleman or little lady. Oh, you're ADHD. No, I'm 5. But anyway, the diagnosis of ADHD should be made in line with diagnostic criteria from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or the International Classification of Disease. These require impairments that are out of step with the person's age, that began before they were 12, and that have impacts across multiple settings, such as home, school, or work. This recent study used an online questionnaire of 322 Australian psychologists involved in diagnosing and treating ADHD. The goal was to see how they were assessing for it, and if that matched the Australian guidelines and how well they knew the diagnostic criteria. 3 in 4 psychologists said they always followed guidelines, with more saying they followed them some of the time. But overall, fewer than half reported assessment practices that actually followed the guidelines. My question is, which guidelines are they following? The ones where they have to prescribe more pills to patients? So this suggests people seeking an assessment can't rely on a clinician's assurance they're following the guidelines and need to ask specifically what's involved.
Well, I'm wondering that, you know, I mean, again, I think this speaks to the much larger issue here of things that are over, this is overdiagnosed. This particular condition, we talked about it, it's overdiagnosed, and I don't think it's a disorder necessarily. It might, you know, it's more an indictment on the systems out there and the food and everything else than it is. It's like blame the child for, you know, something that they have no control over. They're losing their mind because everything is so, I don't like this.
It's easier to blame the kid.
It's easier to blame the kid. Okay. I think I have. So, we actually have a last call.
We do.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
Oh God.
Okay. So I don't really want to, this was,
we don't have any more voicemails. So we're going to get into the last, story that we have for you today.
Yes. And it's an honest review of Kraft's new protein mac and cheese.
You slaves can get used to mac and cheese, mac and cheese,
mac and cheese,
macaroni and cheap cheddar melted together.
Mac and cheese, mac and cheese, mac and cheese. Yeah.
Okay, so what's unique about Power Mac is that Kraft actually went back to square one and reformulated its pasta for this product. Now, according to Kraft, it took almost a year to develop Power Mac's proprietary protein and fiber-enriched noodles. The result is mac and cheese with 17 grams of protein and 6 grams of fiber per serving.
It's still hot, fresh garbage,
yes.
Trash food.
Well, yes, and apparently tastes just as good as the original. It does take a little longer to cook due to the pasta differences.
Oh, I think that's funny. It takes longer to cook the pasta now?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it's almost twice as long. It's like, I don't know. I think it takes like 8 minutes or something. Now it takes like 13 or 14 minutes or something. I don't know.
Oh, my God. I really want to see a kid that you sit there who wants mac and cheese and you have to dash their life for 15 whole minutes while you... Oh, wait, no, it's more than that because it takes time to boil the water, 15 minutes to cook it. Then you... you're looking at 20, 25, 30 minutes before the munchkin gets their mac and cheese. Yeah, that's not going to cause the little carved out crotch goblin to lose their mind or anything.
No, and with all that, with all that fiber that they've put in, right? Yeah, that means,
oh,
that
you
means
guys,
the carbs are going to hang out even longer.
You guys have got to love the ingredient list, which we have for you on this new pasta.
Yes, it's pasta with pea protein, which contains the following ingredients: wheat flour, pea protein isolate, vital wheat gluten, niacin, iron, ferrous sulfate is what they say in there, thiamine, mononitrate, which is vitamin B1, riboflavin, which is vitamin B2, and folic acid. Yeah, okay. That's everything and then the cheese sauce mix, which is whey, milk fat, salt, milk protein concentrate, sodium triphosphate, and contains less than 2% of tapioca flour?
Yep.
Citric acid, lactic acid, sodium phosphate, calcium phosphate, with olestrin paprika.
Whoa, wait. Oh, no, that's not oleo.
Oleo resin turmeric and annatto added for color, enzymes and cheese culture. My God, that stuff just
There is nothing in there that's real.
No, it's all fake.
And gay.
And gay, but we knew that. All right. So speaking of fake and gay, I think it's probably time
I really think that it is time because...
Well, that's about it, really.
What?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Fuck it. I gotta go.
Yeah, fuck it. We gotta go. We didn't go nearly as long as we usually do. We got through our stories really fast. It was kind of a crazy ride today. But we do want to thank you guys for joining us. And truly...
I'm so fucking over this.
It is time for this to be over.
I got an idea to end all this bullshit.
Jordan fades back. Swoosh. And that's the game!
Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. You're cool, and fuck you, I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Boy, that was a lot of fun, wasn't it?